This is an ABC podcast.
Live across Victoria.
On the ABC Listen app.
Your smart speaker.
And on your radio.
This is ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
The conversations that are important to you. In your town, your suburb.
This is The Conversation Hour with Rochelle Hunt.
Beginning to look a lot like Christmas.
20 years ago, Krista Pitts and her twin sister turned their family tradition into one that is now a tradition in homes all around the world. It's quite possibly a tradition at your place. But when Krista, her sister, and her mum decided to try and get their Christmas tradition published as a Christmas story, they were turned down by publisher after publisher. So they sold their house, maxed out their credit cards, and did it themselves. And that is how the elf on the shelf was born. That cheeky little elf that gets up to naughty antics throughout the night when we all sleep is now a global story, a toy, and a Netflix series. So you're going to meet Krista, the woman behind this, in just a moment. But what's your family Christmas tradition? Maybe it is an elf. Maybe it's handwritten, tea-stained treasure maps for your advent calendar, a special cookie recipe, or maybe a sneaky present on Christmas Eve. What makes your Christmas unique to your family? Maybe a little bit weird, but something that just your family does at Christmas. And also coming up this hour, what your hand gestures say about you.
On the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
Is there a cheeky little Christmas elf in your home that does strange things in the night whilst everyone is sleeping? What is your Christmas tradition? Something that just your family does. Gary's in Port Arlington. G'day, Gary.
Hey, Rochelle. How are you?
Good. What do you do in your house?
What do we do? Well, just for the adults, apart from the normal presents, we have to buy, just nominate one person, and we have to buy a sort of rubbish or crappy present that's completely useless for the person you're buying it for. And just as a jokey sort of thing, so one year I got my son-in-law a left-handed golf club, and another year I got this thing I had to put on my head, and I got pelted with ping pong balls. It was like a big netball thing, and all sorts of.
I love it. It makes it fun, doesn't it? It takes a bit of the stress out of it.
It does. Yeah. Well, every year gets a bit harder because you got to look for something that's a bit more quirky and a bit more.
Yeah, and how long has it been running, Gary?
Oh, we've been doing this for a long time now. 7 years. Yeah,
so I love it.
It's always a lot of fun.
And what do you do with all the crazy gifts in the end?
We try and re-gift them, I think.
Yeah. Pass them on, wrap them up and give them again another year. Good on you, Gary. Merry Christmas. Christy's in Geelong West. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Well, what's your family Christmas tradition? Weird, wonderful?
It's a little bit weird. Like you were talking about the elf on the shelf, we do that every year, but we've got sort of over 20 of them going at the moment.
In your house?
And they're all different colours. So I got, about probably 8 years ago, I got into trouble on Facebook for selling a secondhand elf on the shelf book because it was trademarked. And just before that had happened, I lost my Facebook account for about 6 months for that. But just before that had happened, they brought them out in all different kind of colours, and you can still kind of get them in different colours now. But it's sort of it's almost like the black market of Elf on the Shelf.
Wow, that's interesting. Well, we're going to speak to the creator of Elf on the Shelf in just a moment, so we'll ask her whether or not it's hers, or if it's trademarked, or if there are others. So, hang on, how many little Christmas elves do you have in your home, Christy?
All at once, we really only have sort of 1 to 4 or 5 going at once. But on Christmas Eve, they'll all return for a big lineup on the painting or the mirror that we have. and they all go back to the North Pole together.
Wait, and how long has this been going?
My eldest son is 8 and the second son is 6. It's been going along since the whole time, really, since I got them in the different colours. And then I've added to the colours, and we've got all the colours of the rainbow plus patterns now. And then I found a lady a few years ago doing them in, like, foil colours, like shiny, wow. And they'd come at Easter.
So this sounds like a full-time job for you, Christy.
Oh, it is. And if they don't move around, there's questions asked.
Yeah.
We don't do all those crazy things where you go and do the food set up and everything. We just do the moving around and the colours, and that's kind of enough to keep us busy.
I could imagine. Christy, I'm very impressed. Thank you. 1-300-222-774 if you have a wild and a weird Christmas tradition in your household like Christy. And sometimes they take on a life of their own, the Christmas traditions. We thought it was a really good idea to stop buying a new advent calendar every year. You know, generally they're full of junk and rubbish or chocolate. So we thought, let's buy a really beautiful wooden advent calendar and let's reuse it every year. And we started, I don't really do it. My husband does it all, making tea-stained maps where you have to find the little gift or the little treat in the advent calendar. But this has become the biggest mission. They are so detailed. They are so over the top. It is incredibly beautiful. I actually said, look, we need to start putting these into a scrapbook because there is something so intense about these maps that we create. But maybe you have a Christmas tradition in your household. What is it? Well, Krista Pitts is the co-founder of The Elf on the Shelf. She is also the co-CEO of the Lumistella company. And Krista, 20 years ago, yourself, your sister and your mum decided to take what was your Christmas tradition with a little fella known as Fizby and take it to the world. How did it all start?
Yeah, you know, it was so funny. It began in our own family when we were babies. So my sister and I don't actually remember a Christmas without our elf. As you mentioned, his name was Fizby. And Fizby would fly back and forth to Santa every night while we were asleep during the holiday season. And in the morning when we would wake up, Fizby had returned from his nightly report to Santa and was hiding in a new place in our home. And so every morning, my sister and my brother and I would race out of bed to go find our elf. And there were two rules in our home. The first was that you couldn't touch the elf because the Christmas magic was fragile.
Yes.
And it could go away. And the second was that the elf is there to watch and to listen, so it can't speak to you. Again, reiterating good, you know, lessons that you want children to think through, right? If you're listening, you're not speaking. So that's how it started as a tradition in our home. I hate to say how many years ago, but then as my sister had the very first of the grandchildren and we'd all grown up and moved away, she was sitting with my mom one afternoon and said, "Mom, why don't we write a book about our elf?" And of course, they got Santa's permission, as they should, and they began writing that night what would become The Elf on the Shelf.
That Christmas magic and what we all believe in is so special, and the magic is real. And the fact that you can't touch the elf because it does kill the Christmas magic. And as we heard before, you know, they go back to the North Pole or wherever they spend their time over Christmas, and every elf in every house is a little different and the magic is a little different. When you speak to families all around the world, Krista, do they share their stories of what the elf does in their household with you?
Absolutely. I really hesitate at times to tell people that I work for Santa because they instantly pull out their phone and start showing me pictures of their elf and talking about what they named it and the joy it's brought their family, which honestly, that part never gets old. There are so few things that you can do in life, particularly in your career, where if someone hears what you do, they usually gasp. There's this moment of disbelief because they believe that it's probably owned by some large company at this point, and it's not. It's still family owned and operated. And then they start sharing their stories of thoughtfulness and kindness and true joy and the imagination that this season is meant to represent, right? Wonder and magic. And whether you are a believer in Santa or not, it's that spirit that all of us that work for the Luma Stella company serve.
Krista, Christmas traditions can start slowly and then all of a sudden you realize, oh, wow, we do this every year. This is really special. Mm-hmm. Or it doesn't feel like Christmas unless we're doing this. But quite often it's one person that will instigate a tradition too. It might be a nan or a pa or a dad or a sibling. But it's about keeping traditions alive, isn't it? And passing mm-hmm. them down through family members.
Yeah, and I loved hearing your story about the tea-stained maps that lead you to...
Oh, that this is taken on a life of its own.
Now, who came up with that?
We all sort of did, but my husband's turned it into a second job almost, but it's beautiful to watch.
And just so incredible that something that he started has become such a moment in your home and for your family, and I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, that's what tradition is about. And that's one of the things that made us so different when we came to the market. There wasn't anything out there like it. No one even had an idea of what the elf on the shelf was. We weren't bringing a trinket or a toy. It was a tradition in a box. And that had never been done before. And so it was a really different mindset. And it wasn't about coming up with a concept or a gimmick. It was really, truly sharing our family tradition, just as you've now shared with so many. And there are others that have shared, you know, theirs. We have others as well. You know, we do a family Christmas cookie decorating contest, no matter where you are in the world. And we have our friends and family join us on WhatsApp and they get to vote, but they don't know who made the cookies.
Will you be back home for Christmas, Krista, or will you be in Australia?
I'm actually going to be in Germany for Christmas this year, which will be nice. I'm going to attend a Christmas market for the very first time, an official Christmas market, I should say, and I'm really excited about it.
Well, something that started out as your tradition, now everybody has their own little versions of it. It's the Elf on the Shelf is everything from a story to a tradition in people's homes. It's a Netflix series. It might be, you might see huge, big versions of Elf at the Macy's Thanksgiving Parade. Thank you so much for sharing a little bit of your Christmas magic with us today, Krista.
It was such a delight, and I wish you a very Merry Christmas.
Thank you
for having me.
See ya, Krista Pitts, the co-founder of the Luma Stella company, talking about her Christmas tradition, how it started, and maybe you have a Christmas tradition, maybe you have a cheeky elf in your house as well. What's their name? What do they get up to? 1-300-222-774. This, Rish. My tradition is a simple one. My mum always made a tomato pie for lunch, but when she became unwell, I took it over and it still continues 25 years later. This one I love, and I might borrow this tradition. I wonder whether I could get this one happening in our household. Christmas tradition. If you get given an item of clothing, it has to be put on there and then over whatever you're wearing. And if you get multiple Christmas jumpers or clothing, it has to keep going. It's very funny when someone gets heaps of clothing and it's a 35-degree day and you have to just keep putting it on. And this, my mum is really artistic and makes a beautiful piñata every year that we break on Christmas Day. It always has a theme. In 2020, it was the shape of coronavirus because she figured we'd all like to hit it with a stick. She spends months on it. Thanks, Mum. That's from Hannah. And another says, it took years, but gradually we've transitioned to a non-gift Christmas. So much pressure relieved, apart from the obvious financial one. Now we focus on food, extended family, often inverting orphans in inverted commas who don't have somewhere to be on the day. In the evening, all the instruments come out. That's from Elsie. I love that. The idea of slowly transitioning into a non-gift Christmas. I wonder if anybody else has done that as well. Keep your traditions coming through, no matter how weird, no matter how wonderful.
On the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is the Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
Coming up in just a moment, we'll look at what your hand gestures say about you and how other people read them. You know, maybe you fidget with your hands, maybe you point a lot. Do you touch your face when you talk? All of these things can give people an impression, whether it's correct or not, about you. So when you talk, do you use your hands and what does it say about you? Also, your Christmas traditions that maybe just your family have. There's some really lovely ones. There's some pretty wacky ones as well, which are just awesome. Duncan says, we have a mixed family, partners and children from all different places. Every year at Christmas, we take a photo of the family and the following year, we have it printed onto one of those wooden jigsaw boards. And at Christmas, we wrap two pieces of the jigsaw, give it to each family member as a gift. This is epic. Then we sit down together and put the jigsaw pieces back together to make a photo of the family. Then we place it on the wall year after year. What a beautiful reminder of a family coming together. Duncan, that is the sweetest thing I've ever heard. I would love to know how long you've been doing that. Wow, the dedication that goes into it. Keep them coming in. I don't know if anyone's going to beat that one. If you can beat Duncan's, you can text 0437 774 774. Well, the 83rd Golden Globe nominations have just been announced today. The awards themselves actually take place next month. And of course, the Golden Globes celebrate the best of film, TV, and now podcasts have been added to that list. Reid Butler, Nine News US correspondent. Reid, I mean, first things first, do you have any family Christmas traditions that you have in the Reid household, in the Butler household, apologies?
Oh, fighting, maybe?
Yeah, that's one in ours, yep.
About it. Yeah, no, I think it's always a good experience to get us all together from, we're all living all over, we're now all over the world, but before that it was all over Australia. So it's just the tradition of all getting together and having a beautiful dinner and talking about what we've done for the past year and catching up. That's been our tradition.
It's and really time nice. Just flies, yeah, doesn't it? Before you know it's been a year. And yeah. What a wonderful, is it Christmassy in LA at the moment? How's the vibe?
Well, we're actually on assignment in New York City at the moment. So that is the ultimate Christmas vibe right now. So we have seen the big Rockefeller tree and we've seen the beautiful Christmas tree Christmas markets and Christmas tree farms that are on every kind of second corner. And it's absolutely beautiful, but it is also absolutely freezing. Like your fingers feel like they're about to turn black. Like it is, it's crazy, but it is, if you can hear some sort of carols and background noise, that is because it is just everywhere you go in New York City right now. It is a Christmas wonderland.
It's gorgeous. What a wonderful experience. Reid Butler is with you, Nine News US correspondent, because of course the 83rd Golden Globe nominations have just been announced. Okay, let's start with, I guess, some of the most obvious. Let's go with movies. Who in particular took out heaps of nominations?
So the big kind of leader in terms of the nominations is Paul Thomas Anderson's One Battle After Another. 9 noms for the Golden Globes. That's the Leonardo DiCaprio movie. It can be very busy. So I haven't seen this one, but it is apparently meant to be really, really good. Post-apocalyptic kind of vibe. Really, really good performances from the leads there. But the thing I'm really excited about, the showing from the Aussies. So we've had a really, really good showing from some amazing Australian actors, including Jacob Elordi. He led the Australian nominees. He's got two nominations, one for Best Supporting Male Actor in a film for Frankenstein on Netflix, which is worth watching. It's a little bit dark, as you could imagine, but it's really good.
Yeah, that's on my list.
Another for the Best Male... It's good. It's sort of, you've got to be in the mood for it kind of thing, but it's a good one, I think. And obviously Jacob Elordi, he is just someone living here in the United States, in Los Angeles, spending a lot of time in New York. He is an example of an actor that is constantly being talked about. He is constantly everywhere on billboards. He is killing it here. And this is a guy from... I think he grew up in Brisbane. I've seen him around in Melbourne, just in Richmond bars before a couple of years ago. Now he's had his breakout hit with Euphoria, and now he's a Hollywood leading man in contention for James Bond, even.
Oh, wow.
Take over from Daniel Craig.
Could you imagine?
He's been discussed. I've got everything crossed. I think he'll be really, really good. He's young enough for it. He can grow. Anyway, so he's leading the Australian nominees. But we've also have seen Sarah Snook for
yes.
her role in the limited series All Her Fault, which I have loved. It's the kind of binge-worthy true crime, but obviously not true crime, serialized and dramatized. But it's a very, very, very good kind of gripping fictionalized mystery. It's excellent. And it was also filmed in Melbourne, so it's really fun to watch because you can kind of pick the different street corners and things that they filmed the show in, even though it's not set in Melbourne, but you can tell it is, which is fun to watch.
Yeah, isn't it weird when you know that that's set
nominated.
Yeah, in Australia. So yeah. So we've got film and TV, obviously, but podcasts are now added to the Golden Globes. What's the read on that?
So this is an example, I guess, of the Globes. The Globes have had quite a bit of scandal in recent years. There was a couple of exposés, I think maybe 4 or 5 years ago, which exposed the Golden Globes as being, it was allegedly racist in some respects. The members who were voting, it was such a small pool. There was talk of bribery, and it really tainted the Golden Globes' name. I got dumped from NBC as a result. It's now been picked up by CBS for a much cheaper price. But as part of this kind of reinforced kind of changing of how the Globes operated, they've tried to modernise and win back support. So you've seen them introduce categories like Best Podcast, which is interesting. The nominations have already caused controversy here in the States because there's people have been saying, oh, they're all, where's Joe Rogan? Where's kind of the more right-leaning podcast? Because every single nominee is perceived to be from the left side of politics, I guess. Obviously, everyone can't help politicising entertainment here in the United States, and that has been sort of
and I guess too now,
so
because
far.
Every second person, in particular the big Hollywood celebrities, have all got their own podcasts as well. I wonder, given how many of them, you know, I wonder, is because there's just so many celebs that have pods, and the numbers that have downloads, the amount of money that they make. Because at first I went, that's a really strange fit. But then you start to think about it, you go, oh, actually, hang on a second, maybe it does make sense.
Yeah, well, one of the nominees is Amy Poehler's podcast, and I don't know if you've listened to that one, but that is feels. I understand why that got nominated.
Yeah, it's hilarious.
Very, very fun podcast. Funny. It just, she was doing a live taping of it at a theater in Los Angeles the other day, and the tickets were $600 US each to try and get in, because I saw it on the board at the theater, and I thought, excellent. So that's the kind of podcast everybody's loving.
I'd almost pay that.
Many podcasts.
I would honestly almost pay that. You know, everyone has their thing that they'll overpay for, and I reckon that would be mine.
And whenever I've done those big purchases where I've kind of thought, I'm going to regret this, guess what? Never regretted it. It's been worth it, and I think that would have been one of the things, but I probably just realistically couldn't justify that, but one day maybe.
Yeah.
But it's great to see her doing so well, and some of the other, the Call Her Daddy podcast, which Gen Z is absolutely obsessed with, and millennials as well. That's been really
She gets some big names.
As well.
So Reid Butler is with you, Nine News US correspondent. We're talking about the Golden Globes nominations, which have just been announced today. Podcasts have been added to those noms. This is sort of a slight question without notice. I just wonder if it's making any ripples in the entertainment world, in Hollywood, and if you think it will make a difference. But given that they're potentially Netflix buying out Warner Brothers, or the Warner Brothers Discovery arm anyhow, some people are saying it will sort of reshape Hollywood in particular and what gets made. Is that a bigger deal as what it feels like it might be?
I think it is a huge deal. So Netflix being a successful bidder at this stage in buying Warner Brothers Discovery, which is probably the most iconic movie studio in Hollywood. It's had these huge franchises, things like Harry Potter and Game of Thrones on HBO. It also owns CNN. It's a massive, massive deal. It's also had one of the best showings in the Golden Globes nominations, Warner Brothers, with Sinners has been nominated a whole bunch of times. That Leonardo DiCaprio movie we were talking about earlier as well, nominated. And now Netflix making this big, I think it's $110 billion bid, successful bid at this stage for Warner Brothers.
Wow.
That means that Netflix, if successful, and there's a whole lot of hurdles still to go here, but if it's successful, it will have a catalogue that is unbeatable in terms of its content that people can watch, which could signal the end of the streaming wars altogether. All of those rivals, once Netflix gobbles up Warner Brothers and also HBO Max, which is the third most popular streamer in the world, White Lotus, all of these massive shows is on HBO. If Netflix gets all of that, it's going to be incredibly hard to beat. So, and then also gobbling up Warner Brothers, that will potentially change how Warner Brothers movies are released in the future.
Wow.
Does that hurt movie theaters because more of those movies are going to be put straight on Netflix? But then, fascinatingly, Paramount, Skydance has just launched a hostile takeover. It wants Warner Brothers and to take all of that content as well. So that it's still a moving feast right now. But if Paramount buys that, then they want it because of CNN. And if they get their hands on CNN, they want to change editorial changes for CNN. So it is. Hollywood right now is in a state of flux. DC is involved. Washington, D.C. Trump is involved. And it's all changing, but it's something that everybody will be watching very closely over the next.
Absolutely. And then what it does to our prices, if you lose that sort of competition, if it just pushes our prices up. Wow. Reed, thank you. Enjoy the Golden Globes. Enjoy your Christmas spirit in New York City as we speak. And hopefully we'll speak to you in the new year.
Looking forward to it. Thank you.
See ya. Reed Butler, Nine News US correspondent. The 83rd Golden Globe nominations just been announced. We've also been talking about your strange and wonderful and weird Christmas family traditions. Good morning, Rochelle. In our family, we have the Christmas birds. The story is that Father Christmas sends out Christmas birds to keep an eye out for who's naughty and who's nice, but only adults can see them because they're so quick. For the 2 weeks leading into Christmas, Mum said it was quite peaceful because, for example, if I was misbehaving, then Mum would shout out that a Christmas bird was watching and saw me being naughty, and now they're flying off to the North Pole to tell Father Christmas. I love that. I'm taking that one. Thank you very much. Rish, our Christmas tradition is that our children have a photo with Santa. Last week, we did our 25th continuous year. They're all on display near our tree. Our kids are now 25, 23 and 19. They are still happy to line up with Santa. We're going to keep it going as long as possible. That's from Simon. And this, Rish, our Christmas tradition after the gifts have been unwrapped is to use the paper and the ribbons to make hats. Ooh, that's fun. The bigger the better. Also, it's a good way to get rid of Christmas wrapping. That's from Derek. Oh, I'm going to take that one too. I am making a long list. Caroline's in Digger's Rest. Hi, Caroline.
Hi, Rish. How are you?
What's your Christmas tradition? There's some wonderful...
Well, we've got a couple in our house.
Yeah.
The longest standing one is family and friends gather together a couple of weeks before Christmas to have a gingerbread house making day. And it's a judged day and we give each other points for things At different years, you know, that's grown up to 30 people and we're now down to back to the core four, and grandchildren have come along and bringing their school friends along as well. So.
And they're still, and do they get quite elaborate?
Oh, yeah. It's you start planning as you're making this year's one, you start thinking, oh, what if I did this and this and this? Oh, next year I'm going to make... Yes, and they can get quite elaborate.
I share something with you, Caroline? My daughter made her first gingerbread house a few years ago, spent hours on it, and it looked terrible, but she loved it, right? It looked great. It was cute. And then I had to, my only job was to carefully place it into the fridge.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And I knocked the top of it, and let's just say it was a house of cards. It came. There was gingerbread house all over the floor. There were tears from me, from her. We did rebuild though. So we went down the street, we bought everything and we rebuilt. Yeah. So just be careful when you're putting it in the fridge.
Yeah, see, those sorts of things, they make stories, don't they?
They do, right? We laugh about it now.
Yeah.
Merry Christmas.
We do. Thank you.
See ya. Colin's in Wodonga. Hi, Colin.
Good morning. How are you?
Well, what's your tradition?
Water fight. We have a massive, massive water fight. I live out of town and I'm not on town water, so we can't waste water normally, but we allow it that one day of the year. And it's very, very competitive,
put it that way. Right? I was going to say, I remember Ms. Jacinta Parsons talking about one of her family Christmas water fights one year, and, you know, it was stealth-like. You know, there were people hiding out in camo. There was water guns. It got quite serious, Colin.
Yes, it does. And it's good to see. They even run through the house, not that they're supposed to.
Yeah, but there's got to be rules. It's got to be outside.
Oh, yeah, they don't take any notice of that.
Yeah, so all right.
They get carried away and they run through and Mum's yelling at them, get outside, she'll tan their bums. But they're too old for that.
Have you got your plan, your water fight plan ready for this year? Your tactic?
Yes. I've bought electric water guns. Right, and I'm giving them away to the kids, and then when they start fighting, I'll just sit down with some food, and they'll leave me alone.
I like your plan, Colin. Thank you. See, this is what it is. It works in your family. You can keep them coming through. They're fabulous.
On the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
So do you use your hands a lot when you speak? Maybe you fidget, maybe you push your hands together, maybe you point. Do you touch your face? Do you think about maybe some of your hand gestures or even just some of your body language and what it says to other people? Does it determine what people think that we're saying? Does it change what people think we're saying? Well, a new study has actually looked into what it does mean when we use our hands when we talk and how it can change how people perceive us. Steve Allen is a psychiatrist and a writer and has been looking into this. Steve, I'm really conscious now. Even I'm sitting in here in a studio on my own, I use my hands flat out and I have no idea what it tells people about, you know, how they perceive me and whether they perceive me differently because of how I use my hands. What has this particular study looked at?
Hi, Rochelle. Yeah, it's an interesting study because we all use our hands, even when we're on the radio and on the telephone. You'll see people walking down the street gesticulating as they're chatting on the phone. And so what this study did was they looked at about over 2,000 TED Talks. You know, they're those short talks that cover all sorts of topics. And they broke them down into over 200,000 clips. And then they analysed the sorts of hand movements people used and what the audience's reactions were. And they found that people used roughly three sorts of hand movements. And I reckon you'll recognise them. Do you want to have a guess?
Yes.
Or I tell you?
Pointing?
Yeah, well, so there's lots of stuff like pointing and chopping, things that sort of highlight that you're saying something, like putting your hand in the air or pointing at a slide or, you know, something that illustrates. They call those highlighter movements. What else can you guess?
I don't want to guess them all.
I'm putting you on the spot.
Flipping, flinging your hands around. Like I'm sort of doing it now. I'm twisting my hands around in the air.
Random gestures.
Yeah.
So fidgeting, flapping, all those sort of movements that we all do. We fiddle with our pen. You know, we maybe play with our hair, we maybe adjust our collar, all that sort of stuff. But the sort of hand movement that they picked out that was the most important one and the one that became the centre of the argument of the article was the so-called illustrated gestures. These are where your hands literally draw what you're saying. And so they're things like, you know, you'll say, this idea is out of the box and you'll draw a box. Or as you can see, the numbers went up and your hand will draw a graph in the air. So they're illustrated movements are things where your hand literally draws the idea that you're trying to explain.
Oh, I wonder how common that is. I'm trying to imagine how many and visualize how many people I know who do that. Is that a common type of hand gesturing, Steve Allen? I don't even know if that's a word. Gestures?
Yeah, it is. It is. Since I read the article, I've been watching constantly what people do. And it is true. The good communicators use Illustrator movements all the time. I've been doing a locum recently up in Queensland. And so I was watching all the other doctors after I read this article talk to patients, you know, when I was in rooms. And you'd see it all the time. You know, a lot of the really good communicators would look the patient in the eye, get their attention, and they'd be drawing things. They'd be saying, you know, we expect a much larger effect from this medication than that. And they draw it with their hands, a small gap and then a big gap. And so they're really quite common when you start to notice them. And the idea is that you can improve your communication skills by concentrating on the Illustrator movements and trying to dump the highlighter. Highlighters don't do much, and random gestures, if anything, distract people. So the idea is to dump your randoms and build up your Illustrators.
So I could imagine it would change depending on your cultural background as well, because different cultures use hand gestures differently. I mean, in some countries, they're very important, and it actually, how you use your hands or don't use your hands is vital into the meaning of a word.
Absolutely. You know, certain cultures are famous for it. We grew up with Italians using their hands, and the Italians will joke that if you put them on video chat, you know, that they want their hands there because it's a key part. And it is. You know, psychologists have said for years that body language in general accounts for, you know, somewhere between half and more, 70% of the communication that you give to a person, depending on the situation. And so absolutely, body language is very important, and some cultures are better at it than others, and some cultures use different sorts. Like, for example, Indians with head movements. You know, that's a very common movement to highlight and to give reassurance and various other things. So different cultures definitely have different patterns.
And given that this was recent research undertaken by British Columbia, I'm just wondering, is it something that we need to be really conscious of, especially in the type of work that we do, when we look at social media and the amount of videos that we all consume now? Are we really starting to, and I'm really conscious of my hand movements as I'm speaking to you, Steve Allen, but is it something that we're just paying more attention to because we're all trying to grab others' attention?
Well, I don't think you should be self-conscious about it, of course. And naturally, when you first hear about this stuff, you're going to be self-conscious because you're going to start analysing yourself and others. But the idea is just to be natural, of course, and not to perform, but just let your hands and your body help tell the story. You know, draw what you're saying, match your body to the mood. And, you know, things like modern technology on Zoom and whatnot, make sure your hands are visible. Make sure people can see your hands. Otherwise, you're cutting out the communication. And the people who want to pay real attention to it, I guess, are the professional communicators. They're the ones who are really slick and will really take notice of studies like this and adapt. But for average everyday sort of things, you don't want to be too performative. And the message really is, if your hands draw pictures rather than just underline words, people will treat you like you know what you're doing. So it's just a handy skill.
There's questions that says, does this study take into account different nationalities, which I guess we've looked at, and I'm presuming it would take in different nationalities, but also, Steve, different age groups as well. I mean, do Gen X use hand gestures more than, say, Gen Alpha?
I don't know. That's a good question, isn't it? In the study, they were TED Talks. So, you know, that's a relatively specific audience. It's, you know, highly educated, a range of ages, except mostly older. But they're on in every country, TED Talks, and I assume they got a random sample. I didn't look at where their sample came from, but it's a really good question.
The pointing one I find interesting in that sometimes it can feel aggressive, even though we may point when we are talking, because we really want to emphasise something. But when you're sort of pointing your finger in somebody's face, it can feel a little too in your face. It can feel a little bit aggressive. Did they talk about the finger pointing and whether or not that's something we should try to not do?
Well, they said you should just try and avoid the highlighter style movements because they don't really add much. But what you're touching on is another thing. A lot of body language is aggressive. If you point directly at a person when you're talking, you're being aggressive. You're basically saying, you know, stand still, be quiet and listen to what I'm saying. And so, I think though, like I think that's died out a lot, pointing. You know, when I was younger, people did a lot of that. But now communication is much more respectful. If someone pointed directly at a person whilst they're talking, I think that person would react and call it out these days. I hesitate to say this, but I saw something like that happen on Big Brother, you know, which I was guiltily watching recently.
Secret shame.
And exactly what happened. Yeah, I was just shamed myself.
Oh, you got to get your research from somewhere, Steve Allen. This text exactly. says, in Japan, the gesture we use for shoo or go away is actually used for come here. I was so confused when I first went over there. I kept thinking I was being shooed away from by people. So that's the idea of getting used to understanding other people's gestures. Do you think, Steve, just finally, the hand gestures we use within casual and social environments versus work environments, that's where it would be different too, and where you really need to pay attention to the types of hand gestures you're using?
I think so, absolutely. And I don't think that's fake or false. You know, we don't want to be fake. But when we're in a work environment, we are different. We speak differently. We dress differently. We treat people differently. We use different words. And so it is appropriate to think of the way our body language works, and in particular our hand movements, and adjust it accordingly. I don't think that's being fake. I think that's just being respectful to the work environment.
Well, everyone's going to be paying attention to how they use their hands right now and for the rest of the afternoon. Steve, it's always good to speak with you. Thank you.
My pleasure. Cheers.
See ya. Steve Allen, psychiatrist and writer. You can keep up to date with his writing via his Substack page, which is just steveallen.substack.com. 13 minutes away from midday. Good morning. My name's Rochelle. This is The Conversation Hour. You can keep your family Christmas traditions coming through. Some great ones. Rish, my name is Julia. We have a tradition of a mystery parcel. This has to be something unusual and cheap, as it gets handed around the Christmas lunch table for everyone to guess what's inside, and the correct or closest gets to keep the parcel. And this is one that I tried to do as well. This is Louise from Heidelberg. So Louise, I wish I knew how you managed to make yours work, because mine just ended up looking dodgy. But Louise says, after years of disappointing Christmas bonbon contents, we now save our paper towel rolls and we make our own, filling them with little interesting things that we've collected from different towns and cities. By the time Christmas Day rolls around, I've forgotten what's inside each of them, and they all trigger a little memory and a reflection of what we've got up to throughout the year. It's become my favourite Christmas tradition. Louise, that is just so beautiful. Our family, says Annette, with many others, we do a river swim on Christmas morning down in the Murray. 2.2 Ks. Wow. And then we share food and drinks after. We've been doing this for 12 years. Gosh, I knew some nice traditions would come in, but I have been super impressed. And we need to up our game in our household. Keep them coming through. You can text 0437 774 774, or you can call 1300 222 774. But of course, this morning, the Victorian government made a historic apology this morning to First Nations people. It follows the signings of a state treaty last month. Here is Jacinta Allen in State Parliament this morning.
Now that we have a statewide treaty, a negotiation agreement between equals, we can begin to say what should have been said a long time ago. To ensure that the wrongs of the past are never repeated, we say sorry to all the First Peoples in the gallery today, and to every community across this state, we say sorry for the laws, the policies and the decisions of this Parliament and those that came before it. Laws that took land, removed children, broke families and tried to erase culture, we say sorry. For the tears shed in the dark, for the silence that shadowed their years, for the childhood taken and never returned, for the stolen generations, we say sorry. For the violence committed under the banner of the state and the colony that came before it, and for the neglect that allowed it to continue without consequence, we say sorry. For the laws that criminalised culture and punished survival, we say sorry. For the wealth built on lands and waters taken without consent, while First Peoples were locked out of prosperity, we say sorry. For the silencing of language and the erasure of words that carried knowledge older than the state itself, we say sorry. The loss of those languages is a loss for all of us, for they held truths about this ancient land that we may now never fully understand. For the forced removal of families to missions and reserves, where culture was controlled, movement restricted, and identity denied, we say sorry. For the policies that stripped First Peoples of the right to move freely, to marry without permission, to work for fair wages, or to live with dignity on their own land, we say sorry. For the laws and policies which removed First Peoples from their lands and allowed the sale of sacred sites without consent, we say sorry. For the laws that filled institutions disproportionately with First Peoples and made this seem ordinary, we say sorry. For the harm that was done and the harm that continues, we say sorry with resolve to work with you to address injustice in all its guises. And to those who carried the truth their whole lives but did not get to live to hear it spoken here, we say sorry. From today, our hope is that your descendants and all Victorians hear these truths and move forward together in the knowledge of your legacies. We offer this apology with open minds, open eyes, and open hearts. We know that words alone are not enough. This is why the state of Victoria has pursued treaty to create the enduring change that must follow. So let this be one act among the many that honours the truth and upholds justice. Through treaty, we commit to building a future where the power taken is returned, where the voices silenced are heard, and where the relationship between First Peoples and the state is remade. Not in the image of the past, but in a future of equality and respect for all our peoples. If this apology is to carry more than words and the intention of members today, then we must certify through what we do next that treaty is not merely a gesture. It is a pathway to healing and change. It is how we begin to right the wrongs that apology alone cannot mend. So to those who held the truth close, both present and gone, and to those yet to carry its weight and wisdom, we offer this promise. Victoria will not look away, not from the truth, not from the work, not from you. Speaker, I commend this apology to the House.
So that's the Premier Jacinta Allan there in State Parliament this morning, making a historic apology to First Nations people.
On the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
Been absolutely loving your unique Christmas family traditions. This is from Coralie Rish. 15 years ago, when my first granddaughter was just 18 months, we painted the front windows. This year, at 16, we waited for the boyfriend to come and join in. Two other granddaughters who started their first Christmases. Luckily, we got three grandkids and three windows. We finish it off with a fruit platter, and then if the weather permits, a water fight. I get asked every year, what are we painting on the windows? We all look forward to this special day. There is definitely a running theme of water fights. Rish, my wife had her photo beside the Christmas tree taken with our first granddaughter. Subsequently, every year thereafter, with her now five granddaughters, there are 12 photos on the fireplace mantle. All the grandchildren just love it, looking forward to the photos. Whenever they come and visit, they see themselves aging along with their grandma. It's a great tradition and the kids just love it. That's from Malcolm. And another that's from Thomas that just says, Christmas tradition. Nothing beats carols by candlelight on Christmas Eve, followed by midnight mass with the whole family. I wouldn't change it for anything. Thank you, Thomas, who's in Melton. That's it for today. Thanks for listening. Take care and we'll speak to you soon.